Our sun is headed into solar maximum, the period of greatest activity in its solar cycle. My name is Troy Klein, and welcome to the new podcast series called Space Weather Living History. During this series, you'll hear directly from the people who for years have been studying the evolution of space weather, how we make observations, and our capabilities to predict space weather events. Now, every 11 years on average, our sun reaches a peak period of activity called solar maximum. That's followed a few years later by a period of quiet called solar minimum. During solar maximum, there are many sunspots, solar flares, and coronal mass ejections, all of which can affect communications and technology here on Earth. Now, the energy from those solar blasts can disrupt radio communications, upset electrical power systems, damage satellites and change their orbits, cause navigational equipment to make mistakes, and even endanger astronauts walking in space. The effects from these solar storms can be far-reaching. In fact, they can have impacts throughout our entire solar system. These conditions are what we refer to as space weather. Sound exciting? Let's get right to the next interview.
Okay, I'm Jim Green. I'm the director of the Planetary Science Division at NASA headquarters. So I am the top advocate in the federal government for planetary research. One of my dearest loves in scientific research is magnetic fields. In fact, I would call myself a magnetospheric physicist. So I love anything and everything that generates magnetic fields. And as head of the Planetary Science Division, I'm also falling in love with objects that no longer have magnetic fields, such as Mars. And so what's really captivated my interest about these bodies over time is really the phenomena that occurs within those magnetic fields, how they respond to the solar wind, how they actually reform and reorganize themselves, how they accelerate particles, how they generate electromagnetic radiation that is observed by so many of our spacecraft. And that gives us an ability to remotely sense what happens in various distant regions of the magnetosphere of any body. So that's what's really been exciting to me, is so many phenomena that occur that it is a constant surprise. You know, if you were standing on the moon and you looked at the Earth with your own eyes, the Earth would be blue and beautiful and oceans and clouds, and you would think there would be nothing around it. But if you were able to see the Earth's magnetosphere, it would be truly astounding. And in fact, magnetospheres can be absolutely enormous. From Earth, if you looked up and you saw Jupiter, and you could actually light up its magnetosphere, it would be larger than the moon in size when you look into space. And so in that volume, all around that planet, are all sorts of fascinating things occur. And of course, that's actually the heart of space weather. That really is where it begins for us here on Earth, and of course for any of the planets that are bathed in the solar wind. Now, I started this field in the 70s when I was at the University of Iowa, and I really watched it evolve. I was part of it in terms of being able to do research and contribute my knowledge and scientific expertise with the rest of the community to advance the field. But that was the field of space physics, space science. The field of space weather actually began to dawn on us as we were able to relate what happens in the magnetosphere and how it might affect our planet. And that actually began in the 90s, where there was a major thrust by Earth science to be able to see or make measurements of how humans might be contributing to climate change, or how the climate is changing, whether it's generated, whether that change is rooted in human contributions or not. And so we began to think about, well, is the solar wind magnetosphere interaction contributing to that in some way, even if it's a small way? You know, anecdotal information was always kicked around about, well, you know, the mini ice age occurred in Europe because of the Maunder minimum. And of course, that means there was little or no sunspot activity, which suppresses fast solar wind along with a lot of the phenomena that occur in solar winds, like coronal mass ejections. And those are the things that really power tremendous changes in the Earth's magnetic field and tremendous responses, for which we call that field space weather. And so anecdotally, you know, one would say, okay, well, the mini ice age is associated with the lack of sunspots, so that connection must be rooted in some science. And so as we began to work in that particular area, from my perspective, the real turning point in the understanding of space weather and its effect, not only here on Earth and the Earth's climate, but more importantly, the space assets that we have in space, really occurred when I started studying the Carrington event. And I've written several papers about the Carrington event, and it was actually two coronal mass ejections that occurred in 1859, one right after the other, for which the second one was actually observed by Carrington at an observatory in England. He was actually looking at sunspots and sketching them. When the sunspot group he was looking at actually fuzzed up enormously, could hardly see what was happening. And what was really occurring was a solar flare right at the photosphere of the sun, which doesn't happen very much. And that brightening that was causing him to have difficulty in seeing and sketching the sunspot was called a white light flare, because he was observing it in the visible spectrum. And 17 hours later, an enormous aurora took place. And so this really was the start of the field of the Sun-Earth connection, the start of space weather as we know it, and that particular event really turned my attention to it. I studied that event because I really wanted to understand how bad could it get. How intense could geomagnetic storms be given the activity of the sun? So have we seen everything the sun could put out or not? That was the question. And what we found in the last 40 years of research with our own spacecraft, indeed, we have not seen everything the sun can put out. The Carrington event clearly demonstrated that the sun can be far more active and far more extreme in space weather than we ever imagined. There's a phenomenon in magnetospheric physics called magnetic reconnection that we're realizing it's of fundamental importance to understand it. It happens in our Earth's magnetosphere when it interacts with the solar wind. It happens in the solar environment, the solar atmosphere. It happens at other stars. And it probably happens even when one galaxy interacts with another. And this particular phenomena, reconnection, is a rearrangement of magnetic fields based on the fact that they're being pushed together. Two objects that carry these fields are coming close together, and the fields must be able to interact. And that interaction causes all sorts of phenomena, like particles to be accelerated, sometimes at enormous velocities. So the heart of space weather really starts at understanding what reconnection is all about, how it occurs, and what happens when it does occur. You know, after I left the University of Iowa, the first place I went to work was at Marshall Space Flight Center. And I wasn't there very long before I invited Dr. Van Allen to come down and give a talk. And he came down, gave a wonderful talk, and of course I invited him over to the house and a number of my friends and neighbors, and we had a very nice little party. And I remember very distinctly that Dr. Van Allen standing in my living room having munchies, and I was walking around with a tray of hors d'oeuvres, was talking to one of the Marshall Space Flight Center engineers that had been there for many years. And what caught my attention was the two of them were talking about Explorer 1. And the engineer asked Dr. Van Allen, did he know why Huntsville engineers painted two letters on Explorer 1? And Van Allen knew what the letters were. They were the letters U and E, but he did not know the significance of those. And the engineer said, well, there are nine letters in Huntsville. U is the second letter, so that's a two, and E is the ninth letter, and that's a nine. So this was really the 29th rocket. So UE was a code. And Van goes, I didn't know that. Now I'm standing there with a tray of hors d'oeuvres, and I said, well, why did they do that? And he said, it was very simple. If this rocket was successful, they did not want the press asking them, if they wrote 29 on it, what happened to the other 28? And the answer is simple. They all blew up.
I hope you enjoyed the Space Weather Living History podcast brought to you by NASA's Sun Earth Days program. You can learn more about the Space Weather Living History Project on our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. And don't forget to join our growing community of Facebook and Twitter fans for the latest information and facts about the new Sun Earth Day themes. For all other details about these programs, including information about our past Sun Earth Days themes, be sure to visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov.